From the studios of WRPI in Troy, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, what happens when you mix the two, and where, like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host for the next hour as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode number 24 of Little Brother, dated the 6th of October, 2001. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. Okay, I think we're actually pulling this thing together finally. And it's really weird because it doesn't seem to matter how much preparation you do or how much in advance you arrive. It's always a mad dash right at the tail end. Anyway, programming note, this is going to be the last episode of Little Brother. This is going to be the last episode of Little Brother for about a month. The next episode is going to be scheduled for 1:30 in the afternoon on Saturday, November 17th. So please feel free to tune in. Let me rephrase that. Please tune in. And my co-hosts have just settled in. Phil and Lil are here.
Hey.
Oh. Phil's microphone's not working.
That's funny, it was Phil and mime.
Let's try it now. Okay, something's seriously wrong there.
Oh, these things happen. Well, we'll
try it now.
He's trying a different microphone.
No, I just can't get him.
Oh, well. So it's a Chuck and Lil show tonight.
Don't you just love high technology?
This is a great example of how low technology would be a better solution. See, if we just stood on a hilltop with a...
megaphone?
Yeah. Well, no, that's high technology. Perhaps a traffic cone. and just yelled to the masses, Phil would reach more people than he is right now.
How terribly, terribly unfortunate. this is a wonderful medium to work with. Once you get all the kinks worked out.
Yes, well.
And I don't think anybody truly understands just how much goes into this. Yes, that microphone works. Say hi, Phil.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh.
All right. We'll have to beat on that a little bit later and see if we can figure out just exactly what's going on here. So, some of you may have tuned in earlier today and heard a different episode of Little Brother at 1:30 this afternoon. Around November, that's going to be our regular slot. And since most of my listeners were not probably trying to tune in at that point in time, would have missed it. So, we're going to probably cover a lot of the same material again today. And we'll see what happens. Or today, this evening. We'll see what happens. No, I can't hear you. Anyway, we're going to start as usual with our stuff from the Risks Digest. The Risks Forum has long advocated the importance of increased awareness of risks and avoidance of critical systems with too many inherent weak links. On September 11th, the Internet stood up well and was a very important source of information. Land-based and cellular telephone systems experienced major outages in Lower Manhattan. A few companies such as Cantor Fitzgerald and eSpeed suffered huge personnel losses, but were nevertheless able to resume operations quickly through various combinations of advanced planning and rapid recovery strategies. There are many lessons that are worth recording, but what we'd rather do is invite people to contribute short but pithy items on what was achieved, what was learned, and what insights might have been gained. Insights can be posted to the comp.risks news group. Anyway, well, let's get some more music going here. And that's quite loud, Phil.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear that?
Yes, I can.
I'm filing my nails. I guess Karen Johnson's going for county legislator, and she personally showed up at my house and gave me a nail file. And, you know, if she comes back and gives me about a dozen more, I might actually vote for her. I'm sorry, I'll refrain from filing my nails.
All right. Let's see. By the way, I forgot to mention at the start that the opinions and views that are expressed in this show are strictly those of the participants, not necessarily those of WRPI staff or management, the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, the Rensselaer Student Union, and any responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request airtime for a rebuttal. I suppose present company included, but we'll not worry about that. You've already got the airtime. Oh, let's see. We touched on this one last week. Hackers face life imprisonment under anti-terrorism acts. Justice Department proposal classifies most computer crimes as acts of terrorism. Hackers, virus writers, and website defacers would face life imprisonment without the possibility of parole under legislation proposed by the Bush administration that would classify most computer crimes and maybe non-crimes as acts of terrorism. The Justice Department is urging Congress to quickly approve its Anti-Terrorism Act, a 25-page proposal that will expand the government's legal powers to conduct electronic surveillance, access business records, and detain suspected terrorists. Did I mention that if you want to contribute your opinion, you can call us at 518-276-6248? I don't think I mentioned that, did I?
Not yet.
Okay, well, now I have. Let's see. I'm falling apart this evening. Have you noticed that?
I haven't been with it all day myself. I've been feeling rather strange.
And this is unusual how? All right. Anyway, the Gartner Group is recommending that Internet Information Server users who have been hit by the recent Microsoft exploits should immediately consider moving to alternatives such as Apache or iPlanet. But when will those in control take note? I'm sure that a lot of Windows NT and Windows 2000 system administrators, especially webmasters, are aware of the limitations of their platform, but corporate strategy means that they are a Microsoft shop. Sweet. A computer security expert has revealed how he altered news articles posted to Yahoo's website without permission. That sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Yeah, like that one guy who was arrested by the FBI.
Yeah.
Who found the security hole.
Yeah, and apparently exploited it and us in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Let's see. Freelance security consultant Adrian Lamo demonstrated that armed with only an ordinary internet browser, he could access the content management system used by Yahoo staff to upload daily news. He added the false quotes to the stories to prove the hole was real to computer specialists' site Security Focus. Yahoo has issued a statement saying the vulnerability has been fixed and a security is being reviewed. But experts say that the incident demonstrates a serious risk. Just think how much damage you could do by changing the quarterly results of a company in a story. It's kind of scary. Yet another attack on Hotmail. Computing reports that one can hack the Hotmail website and redirect users to another site. This brings up the possibility of password collecting. And the hacker who did this, known as Oblivion, reported this to the BugTrack mailing list. The exploit involves smuggling JavaScript code through the filters used at Hotmail. Let's see, what else do we have going on here? The 20-year-old creator of the Kornikova virus, JDW from Sneak, was sentenced to 150 hours of community service by the court of Leerwarden this Thursday. The prosecution demanded the maximum of 240 hours of community service. In February, DW released on the internet the so-called worm virus, which spread itself as an email message. The virus was activated by clicking the email, which was titled Anna Kournikova. This led to the inconvenience of internet users all over the world. When determining the sentence, the court took into consideration that the boy had no previous run-in with justice, that he had turned himself in, and that material damages were limited. The American Investigation Service, FBI, reported an amount of $166,827 in damages. Obviously, this was article came from outside of the country. It looks like it came from the Netherlands, actually. So, let me see. Oh, yes. We were talking just a minute ago about Brian West. Here's a touch-up issue on that one in the Risks Digest. It says, it seems like such a straightforward example of prosecutorial misconduct. An Oklahoma man was being investigated by the Justice Department for helping a newspaper fix a website security hole. The outcry amongst the geek community last month began with an uncritical story on LinuxFreak.org entitled Cyber Citizen Lands Felony Charges. Sites such as Slashdot soon picked up the sad tale of 24-year-old Brian K. West as evidence of out-of-control, tech-clueless government lawyers and urged everyone to email the U.S. attorney in charge of the prosecution. Making the story even more appealing to the open-source community was the Microsoft angle. West had said to have reported on the POTO, or to the POTO Daily News and Sun, a security flaw in Microsoft NT 4.0 IIS, the same one that Gartner Group is saying people should ditch, and Microsoft Front Page, but a guilty plea that West signed tells a far different story and shows how easily a well-meaning community of programmers and system administrators can be led astray. This is the excerpt from the plea. It said, while probing the site, defendant made copies of 6 proprietary practical extraction report language scripts that were part of the source code running the PDNS webpage. Defendant also obtained password files from PDNS and used those passwords to access other parts of the PDNS webpage. Defendant electronically shared the scripts and the password files for the PDNS website with another individual. Defendant's access to the webpage involved interstate communications. Let's see. Reuters reports that the U.S. District Court in Philadelphia has ordered John Zuccarina to shut down sites operated by him. The Federal Trade Commission filed a complaint against Zuccarina, claiming that he has purchased domain sites which are misspellings or other one-offs of popular sites, which he uses to blitz unsuspecting visitors with pop-up ads from which the user cannot escape in order to receive advertising revenue, estimated between $800,000 and $1 million. Zuccarina has registered some 5,500 domains, including www.annakournikova.com, 41 variants of Britney Spears, and others. It's a sick puppy.
It's like pop-up windows from hell.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, well, I'm sure anybody out there that's browsed on the net has stumbled upon at least one of these sites that you go to and all of a sudden you've got 50 million extra windows on your screen that you didn't ask for.
Now, what, they do that just so they can collect money from advertisers?
Well, that's what this guy was doing, yeah. Right. And like the article said, he had he'd registered some misspelled names. So when somebody looking for pictures of Anna Kournikova, which I understand happens quite frequently, they would, if they mistype the name, land on this particular site, and it would just blast them with these pop-up ads. And of course, every time one of these pop-up ads gets presented, somebody collects.
Right.
It's kind of disgusting. Yeah.
I just, if I'm browsing sites I'm not familiar with, I just use Internet Explorer with everything disabled, Java disabled, and DirectX disabled, just so you can't, that won't happen to you.
Actually, I come from it from a similar angle myself, in that anytime I surf, I have JavaScript and Java and all the other goodies disabled. Until I bump up on a site where I actually need it to navigate the site.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'll turn it on and turn it off when I'm done surfing.
Yeah, but I mean, I have like Netscape and Internet Explorer both on the computer, so if I want to go to a site that needs Java and it's a legitimate site, I just use one browser.
Right.
And if I'm browsing something that I'm not familiar with, I'll use the one that has everything disabled, and it works out rather nicely. I don't have to go into the settings and change anything.
Fair enough. Got anything interesting there?
Yeah, I was reading one about the CD copy protection here. It's called Tripping the Rippers. Compromise for CD copying is in the works. And the article's by John Borland, staff writer at CNET News. And it starts out by saying, anti-piracy features making their way onto CDs promise to dramatically alter the online music landscape, potentially handing Microsoft a potent weapon against the leading MP3 format and other rivals in the high-stakes battle over digital audio standards. The record industry is experimenting with a new strategy for protecting CDs from being copied in CD burners or on computers. Unlike previous anti-copying measures, this plan will place two versions of an album on a single disc. One in standard CD form, modified so that it can't be transferred to a computer hard drive, and another in Microsoft's Windows Media Audio Digital format, rigged so that files can be copied to a PC, but with some restrictions on how they can be used. Now, I'm thinking about this, and Windows Media Audio Digital format, but you can't copy it as an MP3, so if someone has an MP3 player and they want a track from the CD to put on their MP3 player, they're probably not going to be able to do it.
Okay, now I agree with that. I think we've just solved the...
Yes, we've solved the microphone problem, and we came in just at the end. He told me to keep talking, so I just kept talking and talking, and I was like, oh, yes. Spitting up the Twizzlers. And then I'm on the air all of a sudden, because he didn't say, you know.
I'm sorry.
Hey, shut up. Yeah. Shut up, I'm putting you on the air.
Well, I didn't realize I was going to put you on the air just at that instant. And Sydney is here tonight, too. Say hi, Sydney. Well, she can't hear me because she doesn't have...
I love cookies.
Oh, do you now? She can't hear me because she doesn't have her headset on.
I also have cookies disabled on my browser.
They're too big on her head.
Cookies disabled, yes. That's a good thing sometimes. And sometimes it's a pain. Especially in e-commerce sites. They tend to they tend to get very snippy at you if you don't have your cookies enabled.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
getting back to the article... I think this is a glimpse of the future, said PJ McNeely, a digital entertainment analyst, with Gartner G2, a division of research company Gartner. This meets both sides' needs. It gives people the compressed audio to play on computers, and it protects copyrights. Although only a first step, the strategy could reset the parameters of the music industry's campaign against online piracy and determine the future of ripping, the popular practice used by consumers to convert CD tracks into computer files that can be traded freely on the internet over services such as Napster. Now, Napster's not even up anymore, I don't think, are they?
Well, they're there, but their current state of health is weird. It's kind of like they've been authorized to exist, but they have to adhere to this really weird model that, quite frankly, I can't understand why anybody would want to do business with this particular model. You can only trade songs that have been approved for transfer, which that part I can understand. They've gone from MP3 to a proprietary format. Now instead of the .mp3 file name extension, you now have the .nap file name extension for Napster.
So you can only play it with their player?
Yeah, and their player enforces the rules on what can be traded and what can't, and you got to pay for it.
Oh my.
So you got to pay for the privilege of using something that somebody else bought.
Hmm. Right.
But not at Nutella.com.
I use LimeWire.
Yeah, there are a lot of them out there that have cropped up since that also work quite effectively.
But they all follow the same standard, though.
Yes, they're all a lot of the new ones are using the Nutella standard.
Right.
Yeah.
If I were Napster.com, I'd just start a new company. You know.
Yeah,
I'm surprised Napster didn't just start coming out with their own Nutella client software. Jump on the bandwagon.
I'm sure somebody would sue them if they tried it.
You think so?
Yeah.
Why aren't they suing all these other companies who have developed software for the Nutella client?
Because they haven't gotten around to it yet. You know, I'd like to actually, I think it would be kind of interesting to see them try it with some of them. Nut comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Nut was developed by a single person, but it's got an interesting thing. It's open sourced. So anybody can just look at the thing, see how it works, and if they want to, build their own based on that.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that the overall standards were not a secret to begin with. Yeah.
But, let's see, I mean, this article is quite lengthy. I think we pretty much covered the points of it.
Yeah. And if anybody wants to throw in their 2 cents worth, they can call us at 518-276-6248. That number again, 518-276-6248. And if you would rather not speak to us on the phone, you can always send an email, although it won't get read to you. It won't get read over the air for probably a month.
or they can call and just do Morse code with DTMF tones if they really want to. If they don't want to talk. You know.
Yep, you can do that. Or even...
you can come down to the station and do semaphore.
Yep.
Ow.
However, it's preferable if you don't...
I'm going to take this microphone off of overhead of me here.
It's preferable if you don't slam into the microphone while doing semaphore.
Well, you know, I can't just talk about it. I have to do the gestures.
Yeah, I know. It's actually, it's in a way, it's unfortunate this isn't TV because we'd come off as an even bigger bunch of nuts than we do already. Anyway. Let's see here. Music industry is now testing different copy protection systems on mass market chart CDs with copies of NSYNC's Celebrity on the Zomba label being sold at least 3 different versions. Those available in Germany have draconian protection. A slightly weaker system is used on the U.S. disc, and there is no protection on the U.K. version. The only visible clue is small print on the German release, which warns this CD may not be playable on computers. Sony will not comment on the NSYNC disc, but a spokesman says, We continue to test available copy protection technologies, and our goal is to implement copy protection on a broader basis to deter digital piracy. Sure, I'm aware of it, says Maria Ho in Zomba's New York office, but she had no comment to make at the time of publication. Sebastian Kalik at Zomba's German headquarters would also make no comment. Julian Midgley of the UK Campaign for Digital Rights says the record companies are using customers' money to fund their own experiments by throwing different systems onto the market to see who notices, who cares, and what they can run with. Sony presses the German release at its DADC factory in Austria. Sony DADC also developed the Key 2 audio system used to protect promotional copies of Michael Jackson's latest single. Why is it that this is so much... No, never mind. I'm not going to...
You know, if they test it out on Michael Jackson's single, how are they going to find out if there's anything wrong with it?
Thank you. You just took the... you just took off with the comment, with the very comment I was not quite ready to make.
Yeah.
Yes.
You were trying to be nice.
I am trying to be nice.
I don't get paid enough to be nice. I don't get paid at all.
Well, neither do I. But I try to be reasonably tolerant of other people's taste in music.
You get paid in the appreciation of your fans.
Well, yeah, both of them.
I thought there were 5.
Yeah, at least.
All five listeners of WRPI out there.
Who could pick up the phone and dial 518-276-6248 and join us. Anyway, all three discs appear to play on consumer CD players, although the Super Audio CD players from Philips and Sony took about 30 seconds to recognize the German version. Both the UK and US versions will play on a Windows PC, and both would let a PC CD burner make a copy onto a blank CD. That seems rather ineffective, doesn't it?
Yeah, isn't that what they're trying to avoid?
I thought so.
Was it just me? Is that the point of all this technology, is to avoid the ability to read and copy CDs?
And plus, if you in the United States, if they start putting this copy protection on all the CDs and they don't in other countries, you can just go to your record store and special order imports.
Well, yeah, I mean it's not a new concept to go out and get an import from the UK.
Mm-hmm. Because lots of people do it for different remixes and other
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
That's it. Exactly. Interesting. Let's see. The German version does not even play on a Windows PC, meaning users cannot listen to music that they've bought while they work. It cannot be copied to a blank CD or sent over the internet using a PC, nor can it be ripped to a solid-state portable such as an MP3 device. However, Apple Mac users have succeeded in playing the German disc.
Hmm.
I wonder if anybody's tried it under Linux. It's almost worth trying to order an import from Germany to see if I can do it. I don't even like NSYNC. Or Michael Jackson, really, for that matter. Oh, man.
Well, order Michael Jackson, because you get more laughs out of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe there's a copy of that one kicking around here. I'll have to check with the music director.
Yes, but is it the German version?
Well, the thing of it is, the Michael Jackson CD, they didn't just do this to the German version. They did this to all versions.
Because
it was a promotional CD. It was supposed to be going out to just radio stations. And apparently what happened is they had put out the original release in the standard formatted CD. And promptly thereafter, it started showing up on the internet before the actual release of the album in the record stores. And as far as I know, that release still hasn't occurred. But I don't know, and I don't really care that much. The thing of it is that after these started showing up on the internet, they decided to close the barn door. Now, mind you, the cattle were already out, but they decided to close the barn door and the remaining mailings of this CD out to radio stations had the copy protection engaged on them. Let's see. Copying using home CD recorders is a variable, with the US CD giving a no disc message on some recorders.
Oh my, I bet that would be mine.
You think so?
Oh, I'm sure that thing gives no disc at the drop of a hat. We put a burn in there, it wouldn't play a burn either.
Interesting.
Which one is this?
My CD player. For our wedding, we needed a portable CD player, so I got mine out thinking, hey, here's great. You know, because I need to go down the aisle to something. So we popped the CD. Fortunately, we decided to test it before we left the house.
Good idea.
Because this was the morning of the wedding that we burned this. Nothing like waiting for the last minute. And we went to pop it into the CD player, and it wouldn't play. It said, no disc, no disc, no disc. So what we had to do was we had to actually take Phil's car CD player, which is portable. It's got one of those things you pop into the tape deck.
Yeah.
You know? And we had to hook the one CD player up to the other CD player via the tape deck.
I remember that contraption.
Yeah.
I remember that
now
contraption.
Now you know why. Now you know why.
Oh, boy. Yeah, and that CD player was pretty trash, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it has no top, no door.
We'll just fade Phil down for a second here while he recovers.
Yes. He's having the same problem I had a moment ago. I just breathed in some of my soda, too.
That's a bad thing to do.
That'll teach us.
Yeah.
Yes. Just so that you all know out there, human beings are not aquatic creatures. We are not equipped to breathe liquid.
You okay over there?
Yeah.
So if you were wondering, you know, don't try that at home.
No. That's a very bad thing.
Yes. Never forget, we are not amphibious.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on the half hour here, so we need to do a quick break for a public service announcement, and we will return momentarily.
Wherever you go, you see the signs. A new century is coming, and with it, 1,000 questions. Will there be peace? Will your family ever be in harm's way? Will a small town in Texas be hit with a hurricane? Will your daughter ever need a new kind of blood treatment? Will that nice man who hands you the paper ever need a hand to hold in a time of need? We're the American Red Cross. And while we have no crystal ball for the world that awaits, we can make one promise. We'll be there. Whether it's in the eye of the storm, in your darkest hour, or in the light of day, we'll be there. Support your American Red Cross.
And we're back. See anything good?
Well, actually, I have something here. Excite at Home files for bankruptcy. Excite at Home, the leading provider of broadband internet access, said Friday that it will file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection and sell its high-speed network to AT&T for $307 million in cash. With the filing, Excite at Home becomes the latest net high flyer to seek bankruptcy court protection while it reorganizes its business. Just this week, Exodus Communications, a provider of web hosting services to thousands of companies, also filed for bankruptcy. This filing is a tool to protect the value of the broadband business for the benefit of the company's financial stakeholders and will help reassure our customers that service will continue uninterrupted through the restructuring process, Patty Hart, Excited Home's chairman and chief executive, said in a statement. AT&T's offer reflects the value in our network, services, customer base, and skilled employees. And you know, all I'm thinking about when I'm reading this, that I'm filing for bankruptcy, I have a friend who has email on Excite, and I can never get anything through to her.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's the same. Okay. Well, here's the thing. From my point of view, I see an entity called Excite. I see an entity called At Home, and I see this third entity, Excite at Home. And I'm not sure where exactly the lines of delineation go. Excite, as far as I know, is a free mail service like Hotmail or Yahoo.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I can get to her through my Hotmail account, but not through Windows Explorer. Isn't that peculiar?
That is.
Yeah. I've never been able to email her from my desk, just from directly on the net. Oddly enough.
Anyway. All right. I've got a couple of articles on the topic of cellular telephones, which I thought were kind of intriguing. As some of you will recall, there's been a push lately for cellular providers to put GPS receivers in cell phones and set it up so that when the person calls 911, the GPS receiver will relay to the 911 operator the location that the person is calling from. And I can tell you firsthand that this would be a tremendous advance because I had one particular incident where I tried to call 911 because I saw one kid chasing another kid. And these were kids that were, well, I say kid, these were teenagers. These were kids old enough to know better. One kid chasing another kid down the street with a baseball bat with blood in his eyes. Now, the thing of it is, I got on with the 911 operator and I said, this is what I'm seeing, and this is where I am. And their next question the 911 operator asked me, any guess at what the next thing was?
How much blood in his eyes?
How about, what city are you in?
I thought they already had that set up, though. Like, I thought that if you called 911 and hung up, you know, due to accident, that they would send police.
They do that if you're calling on a wireline phone, because a wireline phone's got an address associated. I'm talking a cell,
gotcha.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
What city are you in?
Hmm.
Yeah. And that's scary. And that's why initiatives like this are being pushed.
Dial 518-911. Then at least you know you got somebody in New York somewhere.
Yeah, right. Actually, honestly, I'm not sure about that even. I found out later on that my particular cellular provider, now maybe they don't do this anymore, but at the time, routed all of their calls through St. Louis, Missouri.
Hmm.
Freaky. But anyway, so I have these two articles sitting in front of me, one about AT&T and one about Sprint, both of whom provide cellular service. AT&T makes the statement that they need more time to install a system to locate cell phone callers who dial 911, but promise it will be better than expected. AT&T Wireless, along with every other carrier in the country, is supposed to begin building a system as of October 1st for enhanced 911, which would allow police to locate a cell phone caller within 100 yards. Nearly every carrier has asked for a delay in meeting the October 1st start for the E911 and other timetables that the Federal Communications Commission set in 1996. They've had 5 years to work on it, and they don't think they've had enough time. I don't know.
It's just like one of those students that's chronically asking for an extension
yeah.
on their paper, you know?
That's
like they were supposed
like
to graduate
me.
2 years ago, and they're just like, please, just one more extension. I just haven't had time to get to the library.
In AT&T's case, they asked for an extension until March 2002.
Mind you, I say this because I was one of those students.
Yeah, I understand.
It takes one to know one.
Yeah, I know. Until March 2002 to install the needed hardware and software on its wireless network. On Thursday, AT&T Wireless spokesman Rich Blassie said that the company has decided at the request of several law enforcement agencies to switch to the type of technology it will use in the system. The technology will give a more accurate location of a cell phone caller. Let's see. Singular made a similar request at the end of August. That doesn't seem surprising, since Singular and AT&T are using the same network. FCC spokesman said the commission is aware of the technological hurdles wireless carriers are facing and are trying to accommodate them.
And have been facing for 5 years.
At least. Meanwhile...
Mind you, if it meant that it would bring in any more money, they'd have done it before 1996.
Well, let's look at it this way. My point of view on it is that for the longest time, there were only two cellular carriers in any given area. Around about 92 or so, the idea of digital cell phones started to come around. And some companies even started manufacturing phones that were capable of doing digital telecoms. But the thing of it is that it wasn't until 1997... that somebody actually did it, and it wasn't one of the big two. Hmm. Somebody came along and in a third new band opened up a service that was all digital. And then the other two had to go digital in order to be competitive.
Hmm.
You know, it's like you say, if there
doesn't
any
make
money
them money,
they're not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And
until the professor absolutely makes them.
That's it. And the digital cell phones are a win-win because the caller gets a clearer sound, but for the provider, the equipment is overall less expensive, less complicated, and can cram far more facilities into a smaller space. So they win by, and it makes you wonder when you look at this, why they didn't do it sooner. You really have to wonder that.
Well. Digital equipment, no matter how inexpensive and compact it may be, is still, new digital equipment is still more expensive than the equipment you already have and have already paid for.
Gotcha. You're right about that.
It's a new expense. Yep. I mean, you got to look at it from the business point of view.
Okay.
To understand it, I guess.
That's a fair answer.
Yeah,
that is a fair answer.
Just think about it from, the point of view of, how am I going to make my investors money on this? And then you'll understand. Just think of it all in terms of money and you'll grasp it.
Meanwhile, we get this other article. Sprint PCS on Monday will begin selling mobile telephones equipped to more precisely pinpoint a caller's location when 911 is dialed for help. Although service will not be available until November and then only in one market. But they're actually...
What market?
...doing this thing. You know, it doesn't say, but if I had to take a guess...
What do they mean by market? I mean, they don't mean, like, usually when you talk about a market, you're talking about, like, you know, young, you know, 20s to 25 or something. Like, you're talking about, like, a marketing group, you know?
Yeah, you're thinking of demographics. No,
demographics, yeah.
This is thinking of, this is thinking of location. Yeah.
Okay, that makes
like,
much
for example,
more sense. Because I couldn't figure out how they would just get, you know, get it out nationwide or whatever to all the 20-somethings.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
Do they figure it out by triangulating your signal, or how are they doing it?
They're putting a GPS receiver in the phone.
Oh,
they're sending out 3 FCC vans to come track you down.
Oh, jeepers.
Meanwhile, you're driving around in your Jeep. They'll never catch it.
Actually, I'd like to see those FCC vans in my neighborhood. Well, I won't get into it. We've got an irritant in the neighborhood, but we'll not worry about that right at the moment. They put this GPS receiver. The thing that bothers me is that the side effect is that you now have to buy a GPS receiver, whether or not you want the GPS receiver when you buy the phone, because it's built into the phone. And the thing that I'm hoping is that you as the end user will have access to the GPS receiver itself without having to call 911. You know? Can you imagine that? Calling 911 and saying, "Hey, where am I?"
You know, it would be great if you were on that show, you know, Lost, and they drop you off in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you can just call them up and you can say, "Hey, where am I? And how do I get to the nearest urban center?"
Well, you know, they send a camera crew out with each of those guys, and I'm sure...
Oh, I bet the camera crew knows where they're going. You know, if they get lost in the desert or something, you know, the camera guys, you know, they're all, like, nodding their head in a direction, like, no, don't,
of course,
this way, this way.
Of course, reality TV is fixed anyway, but anyway...
Well, yes, reality TV is a misnomer. I say, if you're going to have a show called Survivor, somebody has got to die. Otherwise, how can anyone else be said to have survived? Survival is about, well, survival. It's about living and not dying.
Well, the thing of it is, the winner has survived, but so have all the losers.
Yes, so by the definition of the name of the show, everybody's a winner.
I like it.
You know, in Japan, they would cheer that. Like, in Japan, when a baseball game ends at a tie, everyone claps and they're very excited because nobody lost. They are. They really are. That's the most exciting thing for them. Us, we go into extra innings so we can finish it off.
You're right.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right.
That's true. I read those somewhere. So, we should revamp Survivor slightly and send it over to Japan and get them back for Pokemon.
And Digimon.
Oh, God, don't get me started. Oh, what about the Mighty Morphin? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even want to think about that.
I don't know. Anyway, Sprint will be selling the phone manufactured by Samsung for $149.99. It's equipped with a GPS locational functionality. That's interesting, actually, because their phones are usually, like, around $100. So... How's $50 for a GPS receiver? Any idea?
I haven't really priced them. I've had no need for one.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I like those the cell phones I've seen with the Palm Pilots built in.
Oh, that's
those are cool.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to think what that one is called. They have the one where this case splits and you flip it open and there's a keyboard in it.
Yeah,
yeah. That's pretty cool. I got to give credit for that one. Of course. I haven't actually seen one.
It's like a Swiss Army phone. You know, you got your keyboard, you got your Palm Pilot,
you have your toothpick, you
toothpick,
toothpick,
scissors,
tweezers, little hole punchy thingy, can opener, screwdriver,
stapler, and collator,
corkscrew. Anything else we could fit into a phone?
I don't know. They fit an awful lot into those little knives. I think you could fit a lot more into a phone.
Beer cap.
Boy, you're not asking for much, are you?
That's thinking on your feet.
But, you know, here's the thing. I'm sure everybody has seen the older style cellular telephone antennas, the ones that have got the curlicue in the middle of them. I'm sure that with some slight modification, those would make a wonderful corkscrew.
Oh, sure.
Well, I don't know. I think that's asking for somebody to get hurt, though, because it sticks right out of the phone.
And if you injure yourself using it, you can use your phone and dial 911. They'll know where you are.
That's right. You got that right. Do we have anything else up here?
Yeah, I have actually an update on your friend Dmitry there. Dmitry Sklyarov. I really have to ask my friend who knows Russian how to pronounce that.
Yeah, I
hear
you.
So we can really end that once and
actually,
for all.
Actually, if you want, I did see an article in Russian kicking around about him, so you could actually
even
get the correct
spelling.
Well, we
can bring her in. We can bring her in and have her read the whole article in Russian.
That'd be cool.
For kicks. Yeah, just for kicks, you know, entertain the audience in a new and interesting way. You won't know what she's saying, but it'll sound great.
Well, you know, maybe in a month's time when we return to the airwaves that something interesting will happen at the case.
No, maybe. Okay, so Russian programmer Dmitry Sklyarov gains high-profile defense lawyer. Renowned San Francisco defense attorney John Keeker, I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce his name, has agreed to represent indicted Russian computer programmer Dmitry Sklyarov on a pro bono basis. Kecker's decision to represent Sklyarov, believed to be one of the first to be criminally charged under the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, could put an end to speculation that a plea deal is in the works. Kecker of Kecker and Van Nest won't say whether any plea offers are on the table, but said he wasn't brought aboard to cut a deal. They're always welcome to dismiss the case, but we didn't come. We didn't come in to make a plea deal, Kecker said on Thursday. We are here to deal with the defense of the case and to win it. Get away from my M&Ms. Sklyarov, 26, is accused of writing a program for his Russian employer, Elcomsoft, that allows people using Adobe Systems Incorporated e-book software to copy and print digital books, transfer them to other computers, and have the text read aloud by the computer. Kecker, whose past cases included the prosecution of Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North in the Iran-Contra scandal, said he was approached to take Sklyarov's case, but did not elaborate further. Kecker said he took the case pro bono because he felt Sklyarov was unfairly targeted. Imagine that. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, somebody with a little edumacation, and he thinks that he was unfairly targeted.
Oh, I'm sure that he was.
Oh, I know that he was. You know that he was. But it's just interesting to see someone in the quote-unquote establishment know that he was.
I don't see how they could legally hold him as long as they have already.
I have no idea how they could do it. I don't know how they could justify arresting him. I just don't know. I don't know.
Well, the problem is that you don't really... I don't know how much it takes to justify arresting somebody. I mean, you got this concept of probable cause, and once you've met certain criteria under probable cause, if you think you've probably got a good cause for arresting the guy, you can do it.
But how can they prove that they probably have a good cause for arresting him when he did something in another country where it's not illegal?
Yeah, well, you can't. Well, in that, I don't believe you can. In fact, I don't believe any jurisdiction is there.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean.
That's been the major slam on this case. That's been my major beef with this case, is that we can't go around arresting people for things that are crimes in our country, but that were not crimes where they were committed. To use Phil's analogy, it's like going up to Canada, smoking a Cuban cigar, and being arrested when you return home. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, what about all those kids that are like 18, 19, and they run up to Canada for a beer, eh? They come back, they're in trouble.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Okay, so anyway, the rest of the story. I think he's being unjustly accused, and that's the kind of case I like to do, Kecker said Thursday. Defense attorney Joseph Burton was initially retained to represent Sklyarov, but is withdrawing to represent co-defendant Elcomsoft. Since Sklyarov was arrested in July at a convention in Las Vegas, programmers and technology companies have publicly criticized the prosecution. The alleged victim, San Jose, California-based Adobe Systems, which initially reported Sklyarov and his Russian employer to the U.S. Attorney's Office, has said it no longer supports prosecution. Okay. So the people that reported him are telling them to back off.
Oh, yeah.
The lawyer is telling them to back off.
Oh, yeah. The people that The people that reported him in the first place,
the
Adobe
Systems?
The
people of Big Brother are telling them to back up. Oh, this is Little
Here's
Brother.
The thing.
I'm sorry.
We slammed we as a community now, I'm referring to, slammed Adobe systems so hard that they pretty much backed down within a day or two.
Mm.
And I don't remember exactly when they did back down, but it was pretty damn quick. I can tell you that. Because we hit them hard. We told them what we thought. We told them what we were going to do about it.
And we told them where to stick it.
Basically.
Both sides.
Oh, and I forgot. There were some rather large protests outside their headquarters. They're making them rather nervous, too. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right. No, don't worry about it. Both sides are currently conducting discovery. What? Currently conducting discovery. Yeah, that's what it says. All right. Kecker said he and his team will be working to understand Adobe's role and determine whether or not it's proper. Colleen Puglio, Adobe's senior vice president and general counsel, did not return calls. Former prosecutors have said that Adobe's decision to distance itself from the case makes it tougher for the U.S. Attorney's Office. Well, I hope so. Unlike traditional crimes, where you have an individual or an institution as the victim, tech crimes enter a new area because all the government has to rely on is the expertise of the company, said Stephen Fracaro, I guess, a former prosecutor now with Morrison & Foerster's San Francisco office. Generally, they're the kinds of cases that government wouldn't even know about if they hadn't been contacted by the victim, Fracaro added in a recent interview. Groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which promotes cyber rights, have been critical of the prosecution from the start, saying the DMCA wasn't intended to criminalize software like Sclerov's. Meanwhile, the observers have said Adobe's about-face has put the U.S. Attorney's Office in a tough situation. If it drops the charges, the office may seem ill-equipped to handle the high-tech, white-collar crimes it has vowed to go after. If it goes ahead with an unpopular prosecution, it could alienate high-tech companies whose assistance it needs to develop other cases. Sclerov, who is out on bail, will appear in San Jose Federal Court November 26th for a pretrial hearing. If convicted, he could face 5 years in prison and a $500,000 fine.
Amazing.
Well, I would suggest they not go forward with an unpopular prosecution.
No.
They have more to lose by pushing it. They have to drop it.
Well,
they have to drop it gracefully, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, the problem is I think that the people that actually have the power to make the decision to keep or drop the case are not really accountable in any meaningful way to the people of the country. Mm-hmm. And really, like you say, it's a question of dropping it gracefully. They're going to try to save face.
Mm-hmm. But they can't save face by pushing the case. They have to drop it carefully, with a certain decorum.
Quietly. With finesse. And, there was another word that came to
mind. Slip from their fingers.
Oh, yeah. Sklarov? Oh, yeah. Who was he? Didn't we prosecute him, like, 5 years ago?
I don't know. It could have been another Russian. He did that on American soil, didn't he? I'm sure he did. He had to have, or else how could we arrest him?
Well, if he was at the convention, was he passing out, disseminating information on how to do this? Or what was he doing at the convention?
He was disseminating information.
So is that?
But that's not what they arrested him for.
Disseminating information by presenting a speech is called free speech. It should be protected, even though he's a foreigner.
But was he using his software in this country to do this?
No, not at all. No.
No, he had a slideshow. He had a slideshow, and he basically spoke along with the slideshow.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, and here's the scary part, is that one of the things that he pointed out is that some of these things are encrypted by stuff as stupid as ROT 13. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with ROT 13?
No.
Okay, the ROT stands for rotate. Basically, spaces stay spaces, numbers stay numbers, symbols stay symbols. A's becomes N's, N's becomes A's, B's becomes O. O becomes B.
Everything's rotated 13 spaces.
Everything's rotated 13 characters, and
halfway
if it was capital
the
in the original text, it's capital in the ciphertext. It's the oldest, simplest encryption scheme out there, and about all it's good for is confusing automatic filters,
mm-hmm.
which it's been used for on Usenet for a very long time. But I guess somebody thought it was adequate measure to protect an ebook, and somebody had the gall to come out and say, "Hey, the emperor has no clothes." You know, that's basically what this amounts to. You know, they never say what happened to the guy who pointed out that the emperor wasn't wearing any clothes.
I bet he got his butt beat. His mama took him home and said, "Son, what are you doing?"
That is if he still had a mama at that point.
That's right. That's right. Mm. Or more to the point, if a mama had him.
Or, yeah. Yeah. Well, we don't need to go any further down that road, I guess.
No, it's not very technological.
Well,
low tech. Fairy tales, low tech.
Yeah, but it is a civil liberties thing. Okay, let's see. On September 18th, a new mass mailing computer worm began infecting computers worldwide, damaging local files as well as remote network files. The W32.NIMBA.A at MMWorm can be spread through the email, file sharing, and website downloads.
Is that the one that you don't have to open the attachment and it just infects you?
I believe that's the one, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it takes...
What kind of warning signs can you pick up to try and not... Is there anything, any way that you could know...
You know, yeah, if you
because I can open my email on the net so that it won't get into my computer.
I don't know what it looks like from the email side. I don't know what it looks like from the file share side. I've seen it all over the place on the website though, and mm-hmm. I'm saying that as somebody that's running a web server, I see a lot of these hits come in, and the thing you're looking for from the web server side. Is you're looking for an attack very similar to Code Red. Code Red would come in and it would make a request that had like a very long string of N's on the end of it, or a very long string of some particular letter. It was always the same letter repeated over and over, capital. The idea was to try to make the computer overload
mm-hmm.
and overrun the buffer and drop some code in that it would then run to infect that computer.
But a non-web server who's just going in to check the email, is there any detection?
I just don't know. Maybe the answer is here.
Yeah, the virus, it takes a Microsoft vulnerability. You could actually download a patch to seal that up. But
well, hopefully our IT tech is taking care of that then.
Yeah, I would hope so.
If you're using like a web-based email...
We're running kind of lean and mean financially right now at my agency, so... he's on limited hours, so it's entirely possible that certain things might not have.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, my answer to
nonprofit. That's how it happens.
My answer to that is actually very similar to what Gartner said. Apache is dirt cheap. In fact, it's free. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but our IT tech's time is not.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know. Let's see here. What does it say about what to look for? Okay, do you use Outlook? Is that your email?
Yeah. Well, yeah. At work, I do.
Yeah, yeah, that would make you vulnerable.
Otherwise, we use Roadrunner at home.
Well,
right, you're vulnerable to just about everything remote thing. That's why I'm usually kind of careful.
Yeah. Let's see. Code Red showed how easy it is to attack IIS web servers. Let's see, thus using internet-exposed IIS web servers securely has a high cost of ownership. Enterprises using Microsoft IIS web server software have to update every IIS server with every Microsoft security patch that comes out almost weekly. However, NIMDA, and to a lesser degree Code Blue, has again shown the high risk of using IIS and the effort involved in keeping up with Microsoft's frequent security patches. Gartner recommends that enterprises hit by both Code Red and NIMDA immediately investigate alternatives to IIS, including moving the web applications to web server software from other vendors such as iPlanet and Apache. Although these web servers have required some security patches, they are much better security, keep much better security records than IIS, and are not under active attack from the vast number of virus and worm writers. Mm-hmm. Gartner remains concerned that viruses and worms will continue to attack IIS until Microsoft has released a completely rewritten thoroughly and publicly tested new release of IIS. Sufficient operational testing should follow to ensure that the initial wave of security vulnerabilities every software product experiences has been discovered and fixed. The move should include any Microsoft .NET web services, which requires the use of IIS. Gartner believes that this rewriting will not occur before year-end of 2002.
Do you think that virus writers really target Microsoft so much because so many people use it, or do you think that Bill Gates just pisses them off too?
I think it's a mixture of the two. Now, in the case of using it to attack web servers, I would have to say it would probably be the latter. And the reason I say that is because IIS is the second most frequently used web server, with only 27% share of the.
Oh my!
Excuse me.
Phil's a little hungry over there.
With only the 27% share of the market.
Gotta oil that mic stand.
But the number one is Apache. And Apache's got more than half the market.
How many viruses have you encountered for Linux?
I've never encountered one. I know of at least two existing, but I have never encountered one.
And do they have software that can detect the viruses on Linux as well?
Oh yeah, McAfee is available for Linux.
Mm-hmm.
And funny thing about the McAfee for Linux is that it detects Windows virus too.
Okay.
So if you're using Linux for a file server, for example.
Right, so you're not distributing viruses, even though it doesn't affect you, that you're
not infecting
anyone else.
Right. I suspect Norton may have done something similar, too. I just don't know. I haven't looked.
Right.
But, I've been running without any sort of virus protection for, or any sort of explicit virus protection, I should say, for years.
Then how do you have safe cyber sex? I'm sorry.
That was bad. That was really, really, really bad. Well, we need to take a moment here to do a station ID. You are listening to 91.5 FM WRPI Troy. And we'll be back in a couple of minutes while we take care of a little bit of paperwork here in the station. You're listening to Little Brother, the show about high technology and low intelligence and what happens when you mix them. My name is Chuck Ritter. Phil and Lil are in the studio, too. And we're taking your phone calls at 518-276-6248. But before we continue, we'd like to remind our listeners that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, the Rensselaer Student Union, or the WRPI staff or management. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request time for a rebuttal.
You know, it might be more accurate to say we are not taking your calls at 518-276, whatever it is, because nobody's calling in.
You know, you got there.
Get on the phone. It's 276 yakety schmackety.
Well, let's put it this way. We would like to take your phone calls at 518-276-6248.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you just want to say hello. A few times. Just like the other week.
We have a caller.
Oh.
Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. I just thought I would crack your loneliness.
You don't know what this means to me.
Hey, no problem. I was just wondering, since you just gave your program theme slogan, so to speak, the high technology and low motives, I was one of the people who had questions about your earlier motto, or whatever you call it, when it used to be high technology and low intelligence. I think the situation has recently arisen that demonstrates that your original slogan may have had
a ring of truth to it.
Yeah, I'm just kidding, of course, but what I'm talking about is that one of the reasons that's being, and one of the very top reasons that's being given for the failure to the failure of intelligence in regards to September 11th was the intelligence community has said that they had too much information.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Too much.
Had the wrong kind too.
Yes, and we're talking about information from electronic that's obtained by electronic means, and they say they have so much. They're so overwhelmed with it that they're unable to process it. Mm-hmm. Consequently, the result is low intelligence.
Yeah,
low intelligence.
Besides which, they're overlooking the very obvious fact that they got on the airplanes and did this thing by circumventing our high technology. They used low technology. You know, they snuck on the planes, and they had knives, for crying out loud, little knives. And they did all this with just that. So, I don't know.
If you consider...
They're looking for the needle in the wrong haystack.
Yeah, well, I don't think that we should put too much store by what I just gave as one of the top reasons that the intelligence community is getting people to buy for the failure. If you think of some of the other top reasons that they're giving, you'll see what I mean. The one is that the employees of the intelligence community, in this case the CIA, don't like to work in the field because they have to go without sex.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
What?
Yes.
Why do they have to go without sex? I'm just curious.
And mind you, it was put in a male chauvinist way.
Because you know, I mean, like priests, they go without sex, and we still have priests. They still do their job well.
Well, I think you're making my point. You know, these are not, you know, while these are being put forward as the linchpins of the failure, you can see for yourself how silly they are.
Seriously, but before you go on, I have to know. Why do the folks at the CIA have to go without sex? I have to know.
Well, you know, if you go out into the field, you're going out into strange territory. You have to leave your friends and go out and work among strangers and maybe among some...
And of course, in America, we never have sex under those conditions, of course.
You raised an interesting point that... yeah, and a good joke, too.
I think I know where you're going with this. Is it that They're worried about the agents becoming too attached to the enemy.
No, they're saying that, you know, sex is used as a symbol of a life of comfort and, you know, if you must, debauchery, right? I mean, everyone wants to get into intelligence in order to get their hands on the debauchery that the life of spooking is famous for, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but
James
it's not,
Bond.
But
so
that's
on.
A myth.
Now, James Bond, you know, he would go out into the field, but he always went someplace where there was some, you know, some very attractive woman who had just seemingly been waiting her entire life for him to show up.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that was, you know, an anomalous situation. Nevertheless,
well, yeah.
The other reason, the other top reason, besides the no sex and the too much information, mm-hmm. is that they don't have any translators.
They don't have any translators.
They don't have any people who can translate the languages of the Islamic that are spoken
but it's Arabic.
Pardon me?
It's Arabic.
Yeah, mostly. Right.
It's not that uncommon of a language.
I know. It's not all Arabic. You know, the Indonesia and Malaysia have a lot of Muslims. They don't speak Arabic.
Yeah, but what the we're primarily talking about. But if we focus on the particular group that is at least being blamed for this,
Arabic, right?
That's Arabic would be the language of choice,
and I'm sure that that's what they mean when they say they don't have translators. In fact, they are occasionally explicit about it that they don't have reliable people to translate Arabic into English. So there you go. Those are, you know, the top three.
Hmm.
You know, a la Letterman. Reasons. I'm not kidding. These are the reasons they're giving. And then they throw in a few other things like, you know, interagency turf battles. And
yeah, there was another one that
like
I saw early on, just after the disaster. One fellow was listing that the fact that he didn't have as updated a set of equipment as he should to gather the information. He said that these terrorists have all this money to spend on all this fancy equipment and that they and the government don't have it.
Now what terrorists were they tracking?
They have too much information to cover, but they want more updated equipment so that they can get more information that they can't handle.
And I would say further, bet you that with their too much information, they probably have the wrong information.
No doubt.
Because these guys,
Osama
visits. They know which brothel
Osama visits. Such a, you know, for them to put that forward, it's such a fertile, they've given us such a fertile subject for making endless, you know, poking holes in it endlessly, that it just goes to show that, they care as much about explaining why what happened as they did about it before it happened. You know, they just don't give a crap. But
it's not so much I think that they don't give a crap, but the fact of the matter is the very real possibility of their coming under fire for it, they're interested in saving their own butts. Well, and that's a much more personal thing. You know, they're so attached to that they're willing to plow over, you know, the World Trade Center and the Pentagon.
It's like these prosecutors that are chasing Dimitri.
Yeah, it's much less personally attached to their life, whereas their attachment to their job, that's very personal. So they just want to, you know, cover their butts for a little while and hope that it blows over.
They were probably all having sex.
know, they were all busy having sex with each other
when the important tips were coming
that's right. You know what they do with that for all that information they have? I'm sure they have it in paper and tape and whatever else. You know, they take the tape all out of the reels and they make a big like nest of paper and magnetic tape, and then they just have one big orgy right on top of it.
Now wait a minute.
I bet that's what they do.
One has to bear one thing in mind though. Hoover is no longer running this operation.
That's right. So they are all actually wearing gender-appropriate clothing.
Well,
when they start.
I do want to clarify one thing. You know, just for the sake of accuracy,
yeah,
you know, accuracy of media, so to speak, when they talked about the becoming sex-starved if you go out into the mm-hmm. field, they linked that only with the difficulty of getting a woman. So, they didn't say anything about any the difficulty in getting a man. So obviously male chauvinism is alive and well within this intelligence community that's buried under information that it can't
The women can do perfectly well without the man, but
they can't translate or process the information.
But the men, you try and send them out there without any hot women around and forget about it. They're not working. They go on strike.
All right, I have the answer, and you guys could probably do this. We have to get, for every CIA agent, you have to get them a bed with a great big entertainment center for a headboard loaded with all sorts of computer analysis programming.
Let's start a fund as well as translating
technology.
Let's start a fund for every CIA field officer to purchase each officer a real doll. And then they'll be all set.
Well, no, this
ship
is a reference to...
I mean, the shipping will be quite expensive, I'm sure, because they are approximately, I believe, the weight of a real human. But, you won't have any problem finding field officers to volunteer anymore.
Yeah. What she's referring to is one of the...
It's the ultimate blow-up doll.
It's the high-end equivalent to a blow-up doll.
It's actually a real doll.
Yeah, supposedly the skin feels like real skin. The hair feels like real hair. She's about the right weight. She's about the right ballast. She bends the right way.
It's a lobotomized clone.
Basically.
Well, not even lobotomized. They just never gave her any sort of brain, let alone a frontal lobe.
We should probably get off of that one before we get too carried away.
That's the very highest technology on Adam and Eve today. Actually, it's not on Adam and Eve, but,
I mean, the discussion, wherever it goes, I think it's, it illustrates, the ridiculousness of these reasons that they're giving,
For the,
but I wanted to ask you also, this reason number one that they gave, that they have too much information, they're unable to process it, leaving aside being able to translate it, because presumably we're supposed to believe that it's all in Arabic. Even the numbers, I suppose.
Well, it should have no problem translating those.
Yeah, the numbers were in Arabic, so we couldn't translate them. Do you get it?
Yes, I do. I suppose you would have them use Roman numerals.
Well, anyway. Given the state of computer technology and, the speed of the supercomputers and so on, can you really buy that? They could have so much information that they couldn't process it in some rudimentary way?
Yes. Yes,
really?
Actually, I can buy that one.
Wait a minute. We're talking about information about something specific. We're not talking about every piece of information in the universe.
Oh, but they are trying to pick through every piece of information in the universe. Did you hear about them downloading the eBay pictures and looking for coded information in the eBay pictures? They spent how many days were they trying to sort that information out?
I don't remember.
And they didn't find a thing. And even if they did find something, they wouldn't know if they found something because it would be coded in such a way that it would appear to be random noise that you would normally see in the information involved in the pictures on eBay. But it just cracked me up that they chose eBay as their main site for downloading pictures to try and decode. But they're trying to find... they're trying to go through every piece of information they can get their hands on to find out anything at all that they might be...
Hey...
doing.
I just had a thought.
What?
All right. Here's the thing. If you're trying to engage in subterfuge, you're going to try to put things where people are not going to be looking for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if these folks are Islamic, then they're going to have a very dim view of immorality, of sexual immorality.
Uh-huh.
So where do you hide your messages? You hide them on all the XXX sites.
That's right.
That's what they should be combing.
You don't go.
That's a hidden
brilliant
message.
Insight, you know. You do not go to eBay.com. You go to RealDoll.com. You hide your images there.
Okay. Enough with the real doll, all right?
I'm sorry. Just the concept that someone devotes so much time and money to such a thing just cracks me up.
Well, my point in saying that the bed should contain all the necessary equipment for translating and processing information was that, since obviously these CIA people are so addicted to sex. You know, I mean, why don't you just, you know,
include in it a free subscription to all the XXX sites in the world, including every kinky fetish.
Yeah, well, so, you know, be during each flaccid period, they just...
Do they have that
men,
at the CIA?
Right? Because they're all men, right?
Yes, they're all men. They are all men, and they are all men that would never need Viagra. No, because they are loaded with natural Viagra. That's right. They can't go 10 minutes without a woman. That's right. That's right. The CIA, where the men are men and the sheep are nervous.
Yeah, their virility is so stupendous. Crowds out their information processing ability.
Oh, God.
What is that something about that kind of mind?
It just makes me wonder about the person that came up with that excuse. What kind of things are running around in their head? That's what I'd like to know.
Well, I don't know.
To even come up with an excuse like that.
I don't know who put it forward first, but it's been accepted by the press, and they're discussing it, you know, with the utmost gravity.
You know what? It probably is someone with some kind of, you know, diminished libido that just imagines that everybody else in the whole wide world is just sex crazed. It probably is someone that has to take, you know, all kinds of ginseng and Viagra and whatnot.
Well,
a little extra testosterone.
Yeah. You're probably right, but I think I've reached the point where I've because of you two, you have such fertile minds, you've given me so much information that I can no longer process it. So I'm going to have to let somebody else call up.
All right.
Well, hopefully someone will do so.
We are actually running short on time, so maybe if somebody does want to call in, they could squeeze it in the next 7 minutes. I did see the phone ringing, but that caller seems to have hung up.
Well, I'll let you guys have fun with each other. I mean,
well,
you know,
yeah, we,
no. This is my sister here. This is my sister here. Yes, okay. As long as we're clear on that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
See you. Bye.
Take care. And the number again is 518-276-6248. We've got about 7 minutes left to the show. I did want to throw one thought out on the topic of too much information. It is very easy to collect way too much information.
I have that problem every time I get on cruel.com. I just don't know where to turn.
Yeah, right?
So many funny sites, so little time. What are you going to do?
I don't know. At my own job, I run through several gigs a day of new data, and it's got to be filtered down into something reasonably usable. And the idea of too much information is very close idea to me, you know. I don't know. Well, earlier tonight we were talking about equipping cell phones with GPS systems. And there's an interesting item here. This is off of the United States Coast Guard's website. You can see this yourself at www.navcen.uscg.gov/GPS/GenInfo/PressRelease.htm. And I will put a link to that on my website at tricityads.com so that you can see it for yourself. So don't worry if you didn't scribble all that down. But on September 10th, the U.S. Transportation Department released a report on the vulnerabilities of the global positioning system. I just told you where the report could be obtained. The report notes that GPS is being increasingly relied upon for life-critical performance in transportation and recommends that various backups be maintained and that new ones be developed. Kind of an interesting thought. Anyway. Oh,
we should put the...
Let's see here. We also...
We should keep the microphones in that room off is what we should do.
It sounds that way. and Phil's
well,
looking at me with
see
just
the look
kind of
on Phil's face.
Just
see,
kind
these,
of a blank stare.
These are the moments when
it's off
we
right
had
now.
A camcorder.
Yeah.
In the studio.
But anyway, the comment I was going to throw out is that probably very shortly we'll go to a new website of www.radiocritter.com, I believe it is. Yeah, .com. And we have another caller. Let's see what we have here. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Thank you. A real quick story about what was sold to us in Rensselaer County as enhanced 911.
Go for it.
About 3 or 4 months ago, I was awakened at 7 o'clock on Sunday morning by a call from a person who said she was a 911 operator calling to see if someone from my location had called 911. I said no. Talked myself blue in the face, thought I had convinced her. Half an hour later, cop showed up at my house. Did someone from here call 911? No, my partner was asleep. My cats swore they didn't do it.
Isn't it amazing how well it works?
I didn't do it. And I finally was able to persuade the cop. I'm old and I'm straight looking, and so I finally was able to persuade the cop that indeed I had not called 911. All I could think of was, who called 911, who is waiting for help, who isn't getting it?
That's your upstairs neighbor.
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, boy. That's a good question.
Yeah.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot. Great show. I'm happy to find you. When are you going to be on again?
Well, this is going to be the last show for about a month and some change.
Okay.
Next show is going to be on November 17th, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the closest Saturday is to there.
Okay.
I believe it's the 17th.
We'll put it up on the website.
Try. Yeah,
I
we
don't
will.
Have the web, so
ooh.
You got to tell me when you're on and what time. And
oh,
yeah, I'm pretty sure it's going to be the 17th. It'll be at 1:30 in the afternoon is going to be the new slot on Saturdays. It's
great.
Basically as soon as football season is over.
Great.
All right.
Wonderful. I look forward to it. Thanks lots.
Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for calling.
Thanks. Bye.
All right. Take care. And with that, we're going to wrap it up for the evening. Radha and George and Vino have arrived, so we're going to be handing the reins over to them very shortly for the Voice of Kerala. And with that, we're going to close. My name is Chuck Ritter. You've been listening to Little Brother, Episode 24. And last shot at the contact information. I can be emailed at critter@verizoneatspoop.com. That's critter@verizoneatspoop, all one word, .com. And you can also snail mail me at Little Brother, care of WRPI, 1 WRPI Plaza, Troy, New York, 12180. We'll see you down the road.
Nothing's gonna stop the world. Nothing's gonna stop the world. Never gonna stop.